back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Our number, if you wish to ask questions or engage in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. We have two callers who have joined us. We're going to go to William in Florida first, and then to Jason in Pennsylvania. First with William, I understand that you have a question on how to accept this invitation to Yom Kippurim.
Yes, I do. Good morning, Yada.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I stayed home from work, and as I said, this thing I've been, you know, trying to understand Yahweh's will and what he wants, you know, as far as me being a father, a child of the Most High, and the things that I need to do as a, you know, as a father, as a husband, and recently my wife and I stumbled across your show here, and we've been tuning in for I would say the last 3 days, in the evening, of course, because I typically work during this time, but I guess, you know, my question is, how does one accept this invitation? Is there anything, you know, I feel like I have to go into deep prayer, of course, and such, but, you know, is there anything specifically that needs to be done?
Yeah, good question. First of all, it's actually interesting that the prayer is not ever mentioned in the Torah. You know, Yah provides his foundational teaching and guidance to us as sharing what is his desire for us and sharing with us what we ought to come to know and understand if we want to have a relationship with him. And yet the concept of prayer is never mentioned in the Torah. So this this idea that we ought to, you know, pray without ceasing, that's Pauline doctrine. It's inconsistent with Yah's testimony. And before I answer the question, then, if you don't mind, on how do we accept this invitation to meet with God on this day, God's fairly clear, not fairly, very clear, as to how our conversations ought to go with him. And what he says is, rather than us speaking to him, you know, through prayer, oh, God, you know, tell me what you want and tell me what your will is. And, oh, God, you know, take care of my kids and my mother and my family and my, you know, pray for the nation. All that kind of stuff that we've been kind of taught and brought up to do. God said, I don't want that. In fact, he even says, if you don't know me and if you're not Torah observant, I'm not going to even listen to you. What God says instead is, I want you to listen to me first. I want you to observe my teaching. And so if you read and recite his testimony in his Torah and you focus on trying to understand what he's saying, you first come to know him through his testimony and then understand what he is offering through his testimony, then our conversation ought to be, yes, I accept that. I will embrace that. That's what I want. Count me in. So we're responding to what he said. So this Christian idea that we just spew all of this stuff out and have God listen to us is the antithesis of what God teaches us in his Torah. All right. So that's going to tell you automatically now a lot about this day. Now you know that this day, as a mikra, which means to read and recite, and means it's an invitation to be called out so that we can meet with God. And the basis of the word is to read and recite, that reading and reciting his testimony is a good way to spend the day. Now, specifically to how do we accept the invitation to this day, William? This is actually the sixth of seven steps that we walk to God. Now, if you were running a marathon, would you have run the marathon if in the last mile of the marathon you drove the first 25 miles and stepped out of the car and ran the last mile of the race? Would you consider yourself as having performed in accordance with those instructions?
No.
No. All right. This is the sixth of seven steps. The fact that the fact that you are genuinely seeking to know Yahweh's will, the fact that you genuinely want to know how to accept this invitation means you are absolutely going to be rewarded. You're going to find God as he is. You're going to come to know him as he is. You're going to be accepted into his family, because what you are doing is the key to all of that. But let's speak specifically of Yom Kippurim. It's the sixth of seven steps. This journey begins with a doorway. It's the doorway to life. It's Passover. So the first step in accepting Yah's invitation to come out of this world, to say goodbye to religion and politics, the first step is the doorway of Passover. It's the doorway to life. You see, you can't be reconciled into God's family and live with him until you're immortal. The purpose of Passover is to make you immortal, because right now, you're mortal. God wants you to live forever. And so Passover, when we observe it, when we accept that invitation and observe Passover, we become immortal. The second aspect, the second step along this journey, is probably the most important. It is matzah, unleavened bread. You see, God's perfect. His home is perfect. Eternity with him is going to be this wondrous, joyous affair of camaraderie and discovery and exploration, camping out together for all time in the most wondrous universe we can even imagine. And for us to do that, we have to be perfect. Because right now, I'm not going to speak for you, but I'll speak for me. I'm dented and flawed. And so it's important that we are perfected so that we can spend time in God's presence. Matzah is for that. That's the purpose of us observing matzah. It's the day that Yosha's soul went to the place of separation to pay the ransom for us to be perfect, to have the yeast, the corruption, the fungus, if you will, removed from our souls. On the third day, the third step on this path to God is Bukurim. It means first fruits. It's first child born into Yah's family. When we become immortal, when we become perfect, God can adopt us as his children into his family. That's the term that you used. You said you wanted to become a child of God. And because that's what you want, that's what he wants, now you know the means to achieve that, everybody's in sync. So that's the third step. The fourth step fulfills the fourth and fifth promise of the covenant. You see, there are five benefits of the covenant. The first is you become immortal. The second is you become perfect. The third is you are adopted into God's family. The fourth and fifth benefits of the covenant are fulfilled when we answer the fourth invitation. The fourth invitation is called Shavuah. It's weeks. It's seven Shabbat. It's about the promise of seven. It is about God enriching us with his Torah, his teaching, his guidance, and empowering us so that we not only understand it and can share it with others, but so that we as his children grow, becoming more than we would otherwise be. Those are the five promises of the covenant. They are fulfilled along the first five steps of the way, or four steps of the way. Now, the fifth is going to address Jason, who is holding here while we're having this discussion, William. The fifth will address Jason's question, which is, how are we brought into God's company before the tribulation? Now, that's what Teruah represents, which is called trumpets. You see, once we have received all these benefits of the covenant, we're asked to go and shout out both a joyous message and a warning. The joyous message is that God's provided these invitations for us to walk away from religion and politics and be perfect, live forever with him in his home. Pretty good offer. Best offer in the universe. So we ought to want to talk about that. That's what this program is about, is talking about why we ought to walk away from religion and politics and the invitation that God has provided to walk to his home. That's what you're seeking. That's why you're going to find exactly what you're seeking. But there's a second aspect of Teruah. And the second aspect of Teruah says, you know, if you're on any other path, if you're trying to form a relationship with a God by a different name or a God called by a satanic title like Lord, you're going the wrong direction. And there's a consequence of going the wrong direction. Your soul will cease to exist. And so the next step along this journey is the one that we're dealing with today. Now, I'm going to share with you what God said because he answered your question directly. But again, he made this statement in context, and I've taken these words out of context. And what I mean by that is, in this presentation in the book of Kara, which is the heart of the Torah, where he talks about this day, about Yom Kippurim, he didn't just say, I'm going to talk about Yom Kippurim now, and he'd been talking about, washing babies in the previous statement. You know, he said, let's begin with the beginning of the year. It's Abib. Let me explain what Abib is. Let me tell you what happens on the 14th day of Abib. That's Passover. It's the doorway to life. Let me explain what Passover represents. Now, let me take another moment and let me explain for you what the second step of this journey is, and it's matzah. And now, let me explain to you how you celebrate Pesach, how you celebrate matzah. Now, let's go on to the third day, and let me explain what Bukkotim is all about. And now, let's go on to the fourth day. And let me tell you when, where, and how, and what it's all about in Shavua. And then he goes on to Teruah, and then he turns his attention to reconciliations. So what I'm going to share with you is now is in that context. He said, then Yahweh declared the word to Moshe, which means to draw out, saying, on the 10th of the 7th month, everything important to God is based on 7, is the day of reconciliations. Okay, so he's defined, the title defines the purpose of the day, does it not? Okay, so the purpose of this is exactly what you're seeking. You want to reconcile your relationship with God. There's only one relationship that God has. That's his covenant. So you want to reconcile your relationship with God. This exists, he says, as a set apart and cleansing, called out invitation. A mikra. Mikra is a time for a meeting, a time for reading and reciting, a time to be welcomed, to meet, and to encounter. Encounter who? Yahweh. What are we going to read about? The covenant. It's that relationship that is being reconciled. So this exists as he's defining reconciliations. This exists as a called out invitation for us to meet. And he says it's for you. Does he say it's for the Jewish people? No. Does he say it's a Jewish holiday? No. He says it's for you. He then goes on to say, this is how and what you should do, how you answer this invitation, and your soul shall respond and answer by appearing before and approaching the feminine manifestation of my light as you approach Yahweh. If you can stay with us, William, after the break, we'll conclude this answer. We'll then... Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. William, you've been very patient when I've given long answers here, but I want to be as thorough as possible because anytime someone is genuinely seeking to know Yahweh and to be included into his family, you are a very, very special individual, William. So I wanted to be as comprehensive as I possibly could be in your answer, and I owe you one more thought, and I think I will have given you what you need. When God asks us to observe these days, when he asks us to do something on these days, to respond to his invitations, what he is mostly interested in is not what we do, but instead what we understand and how we respond to what we come to understand. I'm sure you were listening yesterday, and we talked a lot about this transition from knowing to understanding, and then when you understand, you're in a position to respond rationally. When you come to understand what this day represents and what God is offering in terms of reconciling his relationship with us and how it sits as the 6 steps on the path to him, and the 7th is camping out with him in his home forever, when you come to understand it, you're in a position to respond to the invitation. And really, all God is asking of us is, do you understand? Do you appreciate what this day represents? Do you know what I'm offering you and why I'm offering it to you? And now that you understand what it is that I'm offering, do you want it? And if you do, tell me so. Show me that this is a day that you want to spend with me, that you'll do what you're doing. You'll take off from your ordinary work to spend with me so that we can have a relationship together. That's how you respond.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because the other day, I want to say it was, I believe it was the 24th, we were listening in, and again, it was the archives, and as we were listening, you know, you put it out there so beautifully where, you know, it's not a matter of afflicting the soul, you know,
right.
Yom Kippurim. It, you know, it's more so that he's given us this gift, you know, and do we accept it? You know, do, you know, there's nothing that we can do, you know? And so
right.
My wife and I were just, you know, especially my wife, she was just struggling with the afflicting of souls and such. And, you know, we have three children and some people even put their children through it, you know, and it was just heavy on her heart. And when we heard you speaking on this topic, it really brought the light, and I praise Yahweh for that and for using you in that way. And we were like, you know, this really makes sense. And it was a feeling. It had to have been the spirit. It was just the feeling inside that let us know that it was right. And you wasn't putting it out there in an emotional way, but we were both emotional, and we didn't even, you know, we you know, we weren't talking to each other. We were just listening. But after it was all said and done, you know, I had this feeling inside that's actually indescribable. And, you know, and this is how I know that, you know, we're on the right path. And so, you know, I just want to thank you and your staff for all that you're doing. And we're extremely grateful. And again, we give all the praise and glory to Yahweh the Most High.
Well, William, thank you. And, you know, I'm now choked up with emotion, very goosebumps from head to toe. And it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with you, your wife, your children, and God. He's right now emotional. There is nothing that he enjoys more than what you just said, than what you and your wife have done. You know, emotion is a very important part of every relationship, but the kind of emotion that you expressed is exactly what Yah intended. He wants us to first come to know, and we were talking yesterday about how you can come to know what he actually said. In this context, it's impossible for Anah to mean afflict, because it's a day of reconciliation and you've been offered an invitation. You can't, and your soul shall afflict. How does that relate to the context of a day of reconciliation and an invitation that has been offered? And so you came to know, and then you thought about it, and you said, you know, this is what this means. I understand this. This makes sense. You know, it shouldn't surprise us that God makes sense. And then once you say, wow, now the religious lie has been banished. I know what God said. I'm coming to know him because he makes sense. This whole thing is rational. This is what I suspect always had to be true. And when you realize that, and how much God wanted to have a relationship with you, and how happy he was that you had come to know him in this way, you became emotional. So did he. And so did I. Thank you, William. Please call again, and after the break we'll be with Jason and then with my very, very good friend, Jeff, in Phoenix. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Jason has been very patient. Jason from Pennsylvania. And as I understand, Jason wants to talk about how and when and if Yahweh will call his children out of the world prior to the tribulation. Did I summarize your question correctly, Jason, or did I butcher it?
Oh, no. I mean, you put, as always, Yada, I mean, with your understanding, you hit the nail right on the head. So, and you did answer my real question was, first of all, is that true that there will be a calling out?
Yeah, the answer to that question is yes. It's not the rapture. Rapture is via Latin from Paul's term harpazo. Harpazo is a vicious snatching away. In fact, Yosha uses harpazo in association with Paul to speak of him being a wolf in sheep's clothing that snatches people away from observing the Torah. So the harpazo rapture is a Christian term. It is completely bogus. It's the one prophecy that Paul made, and he got it wrong because Paul said that that his harpazo rapture was going to occur during his lifetime. Now, that does not mean that there isn't a harvest of saved souls. There is. And it occurs on Teruah. So there, we are now in the year, by our calendar, 2012, year 6000 Yahs, 2033. You have to back off 7 years from 2033 and you get to 2026. So the last Teruah trumpets that we can be harvested and kept out of the tribulation will be Teruah in 2026. It's, you know, I can't tell you which Teruah it's going to be that we will be harvested. I can tell you which Yom Kippurim that Yahusha is going to return on. It will be Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, which on our pagan calendars is on October 2nd, 2033. But I can't tell you which Teruah, the harvest of saved souls, is going to occur because he did not tell us. Now, he did provide a lot of insights that would cause us to be able to form some pretty darn good guesses. Because, by the way, you know, we're in 2012. This is now 2026. There aren't a lot of Teruahs left between now and then. All right? 14 of them, right? And so Yah's nature is such that he is really fixated on giving humankind every last opportunity to come to know the truth. If we were removed from this earth and no one was effectively proclaiming his message to the world, it would make it more difficult. We just heard one of the most wonderful conversations I have ever been part of in my whole life with William in Florida, with his family and with his children. And if this past Teruah, if we were removed from being able to speak, he would not have known that message, and that would not be Yah's will. And so I suspect that it's going to either be the last possible Teruah, which would be a Teruah in 2026, or a Teruah within 1 to 3 years of 2026, and that's when we will be harvested. And yes, we will definitely be kept out. Yah's children will be kept out of the Great Tribulation. And the proof of that exists throughout Yah's testimony in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
Right. Well, bless you, Yada, because you absolutely gave me hope. That's what I was looking for, that there is going to come a time that, because I don't think we're going to fix this world on our, you know.
No, we aren't. We aren't. No, we aren't.
It's just not going to happen. They're going to, everybody, unless the entire world came to an understanding like yours all at once, it's just not going to happen. So we need, you know. So listen, I won't take any more of your time. Bless you, Yada. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jason. Just before we go to my good friend Jeff in Phoenix, I just want to kind of diminish myself in this whole thing. It's my understanding is not relevant. The only thing that's relevant is Yah's testimony. When I compare my understanding of Yah's testimony to Dodes, who we've misnamed David's marvelous songs about the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, you know, I look at myself as being nothing but a dull and dented, dirty tool. Fortunately, dull and dented tools Yah likes to wield. He finds it humorous, I guess, or entertaining, or whatever it may be. But understand that nothing I say is, you should not trust me. What I'm trying to direct everyone to who listens to this program is Yahweh. He is the only one worthy of our trust. The understanding that I'm sharing is simply the knowledge of his testimony and focusing on making the connections that help listeners understand what it is that he had to share with us. Now to just a brief introduction. As I understand, the Jeff who was calling from Arizona is a physician. If it is the same Jeff, it is the man who was one of the first readers of Yada Yada. Back in the time that it was on its first rendition and maybe only four or five chapters long, this man, who is Jewish by race, started corresponding with me, and we developed a friendship over the years. He is an extraordinary brother. Is this Dr. Jeff?
This is he.
Hi, Jeff. How are you? It's my great pleasure to have you call in.
Let me first say, Baruch Haba, B'Shem, Yahuwah, V'Yahusha. Blessed is the one who comes in the name of Yahuwah and Yahusha.
Indeed. In Yahweh's name, Yahusha not only came in Yahweh's name, but so do we.
We do. We do on this very special day. I appreciate, and again, we'll mirror with some of the other calls of other brethren about all that you do as an basically diminished tool or dull tool, as we all are. You're a very effective tool, so I think that you put out there, and you're touching the lives of many, many individuals who have had improper understanding or no understanding. And, you know, my personal story is, you know, I go back to Hosea. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge and understanding. And the remnants of Akiba persist today, and the distortion persists today. I've had a good part of my family, some of which have come to terms with me, who had rejected me, spent yesterday fasting and afflicting themselves and going through the whole rabbinic ritual of Yom Kippur without understanding. And that, to me, is heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking.
Jeff, one of the things that we've talked about often is that one of the reactions that we have when we come to know Yahweh as he revealed himself, and when we come to understand what he is offering us, that rather than us afflicting our souls, he wants to lift us up. He wants to nurture us. He wants to embrace and to love us and to help us grow as his children. The antithesis of us afflicting ourselves is that we feel so very, very sad for our brethren, those who have been beguiled by religion. When you recognize how wonderful the gift that Yah is offering us in this covenant relationship, that on this day he is reconciling with us, and you realize how religious Christians and Jews and Muslims have so corrupted and convoluted this story to actually viewing it backwards and upside down. And it does make us sad. You mentioned Rabbi Akiva as part of your journey. Why don't you share with our listeners who Rabbi Akiva is and why you think that his influence has been so negative, so poisonous to not only everyone on earth but particularly the Jewish people.
Well, Rabbi Akiva is lauded and revered by rabbinic Jews and many Jews who are culturally Jewish because they've heard the stories from the rabbinic Jews. And basically, Rabbi Akiva helped name a false Messiah in the first century when the Romans were destroying and conquering the Jews in Judea and Samaria. Palestine under the legions of Hadrian and prior to that, Titus. Akiba was one of the chief rabbis of the time, and he was in a basic war and confrontation with other Jews.
For control of the Jewish people.
For control of who would be the leader of the people. And it's not known very much, but there are several, and this is a discussion that you can get into at another time, Yada, several forms of
I don't want to say the term Judaism, but people who are Yehudim were practicing, and he represented basically the remnants of Phariseeism.
Correct. That's why I said that the only form of Judaism that remains today is Pharisaic Judaism.
Right.
That's because Rabbi Akiva was successful in gaining control over the Jewish mindset, and he eliminated all foes and all rivals to his power.
That's correct. He did that, and he did it in the very. It was done. He basically was supported in part by the Romans for a while, and so. They actually killed him, and he named, you may have heard, Shimon Bar Kokhba.
Yes. And what is Bar Kokhba? What does Bar Kokhba mean so that our listeners understand that that term?
Son of the Stars.
Son of the Stars. And he was named the Messiah in a Yobel year, 133 CE. And what did Rabbi Akiva say and do to those who didn't embrace this false warlord, Bar Kokhba, the Son of the Stars? What did Rabbi Akiva do if you didn't submit to his claim?
People who, I guess, like I would be now, Netzrim or Natsrim, people who are Yehudi, Jewish, who would not go along with the party line of Phariseeism, were tortured, killed, and otherwise abused, and at best, kicked out of the Kahal, or the assembly. They were banished.
Jeff, what I'd like to do, if you can remain with us during the last segment, I'd like you to explain the short-term and the long-term consequence of Rabbi Akiva to the Jewish people. He ought to be public enemy number one, and you know why. So we'll return to that after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths, I am your host, Yada. We have a very good friend of mine, a brother in Yah, a member of the Covenant family, Jeff from Phoenix on the phone. And Jeff was in the midst of explaining Rabbi Akiva's legacy. He is a man that is the most revered in modern Jewish history, is the most religiously revered rabbi of all time. And Jeff was in the midst of explaining to us why Jews ought not be revering Rabbi Akiva. So let me give you back the forum, Jeff. Please continue. Share what you've come to know about this man and his legacy, both near and far.
Thank you, Yada. Yes, Rabbi Akiva, who is revered amongst the Jewish community, those who are religious and those who are culturally tuned into Judaism, has wrought more damage and suffering to the Jewish people than they're even aware of or understand or know. It was he who was the spearhead that backed Simon Bar Kokhba in the revolution against the Romans, which subsequently led to Emperor Hadrian.
Yeah, falsely calling him a Messiah.
He falsely called Simon Bar Kokhba a Messiah. And at the same time, and falsely calling those Messiah, other brethren, Yehudim, who did not accept that and did not accept Rabbi Akiva's dictates, were tortured, killed, and banished. That's Yehudim on Yehudim violence, which is not very well known. As a result of backing and supporting and propagating this false Messiah, the Romans destroyed and attempted, were largely successful in banishing the Yehudim from their homeland, Judea, Samaria, what we call Israel, and which so infuriated the Romans that they actually salted over the land, wanted to rid the name of Judea from the annals of history, and it was Emperor Hadrian who renamed, what attempted to rename Judea, Palestinia. In addition, they also tried to rename Jerusalem Aella Capitolina. That name didn't stick. The name Palestinia has been translated through the ages as Palestine, which was a moniker for the Philistines, which means invaders.
Yep.
These were an Adriatic people, not of Semitic origin.
Who no longer exist because they were destroyed by the Assyrians.
Yes. The short-term effect of Rabbi Akiva was to get his brethren banished from the land, to have the name of the land changed, and to create dispersion and what became known as the modern-day diaspora. And I don't think I have to tell this audience the results and ramifications of 2,000 years of dispersion on the Yehudi psyche and the pogroms, Holocaust, crusade, the whole gamut.
Correct.
Of suffering of the Jewish people.
As a direct result of Akiva's false messiah. All is a direct result.
That's correct. I should also note that Akiva also influenced religions such as Christianity and Islam. The ultimate and long-term effects of Akiva and what he was able to accomplish and basically having Phariseeism survive as the only existing form of Judaism was to completely blind, corrupt, distort, beguile Jews to this very day. To this very day. And it is of tremendous import to me to try and impart that knowledge upon people. When I do, I'm universally attacked on my own brethren. Even Christians will look at me like I have three heads. But that's okay. But what's important to message to take home here is that Akiva is responsible for so much profound suffering for the Jewish people, yet he is lauded as one of the greatest sages of all time.
And, very much like Paul of
right.
Of Christian infamy. Paul, also a rabbi, is the founder of the Christian religion and has beguiled billions of souls to walk in the wrong direction.
Akiva could be likened to a Jewish thought. That's a good analogy.
Unfortunately, Jeff, we're at the end of our program today. Boy, do I ever thank you for calling in for Jason and for William. This is Shattering Myths. Have a wonderful day.
Hi, my name is Annette, and due to menopause symptoms for nearly 2 years, I suffered severe hot flashes, which prevented me from sleeping all night. It was so hard to work.